And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live here out of the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Welcome aboard. A good show ahead. Here's the highlights, and we'll jump in, and we'll do the thing. Pastor Jeff Loxton is with me for the first half of the hour. We're going to talk about a couple of opportunities and challenges in the city and the role of the faith community in that, and also tease what I think is going to be a fun next 6 weeks or so to close out the year on the show around this, this topic we do, this faith and culture contribution from Pastor Jeff Loxton. And then when we're done, we'll talk with Ruben Navarrete, the nation's most widely read Latino columnist, syndicated columnist in the country, about critical race theory. We'll keep unpacking that, something that we have talked about quite a bit on the show as we try to kind of understand what's happening with this national conversation and try to make sense of it as it evolves. So that's our show today. Without further ado, Pastor Jeff Loxton,
good morning to you. Zach.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, we took a bit of a break last week, I think it was.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, man, I haven't seen Pastor Jeff in a while. And it's because that's what happened.
A week went by.
Yeah. But it's the holiday season. It's busy.
Sure.
What is time?
Right.
It's
all relative.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. But it's good to see you. And I know we want to talk about a couple of things. What's on your mind this morning? As we look ahead at the next few minutes,
you know, as you and I were talking, one of the things that we were highlighting from this last week with Serve Our City was some of the outcomes of various churches from the faith community coming together cross denominationally to be able to practically address some of the things that are going on in the city. I think there are about 1,000 people, roughly. That's not a firm number, but that's what I heard, as many as 1,000 that were getting together and helping out. We had people from different churches visit us on Sunday afternoon and help put together about 400 hygiene bags for people who don't have access to those resources. There was another team of people that came together and put together what we call prayer rocks or encouragement rocks for first responders and law enforcement. So it was cool to see people. Some of these guys are second and third time. You know, this has been going on well before this past year, but it was neat to see people rallying around. Of course, this is the season for that with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up, but I think it puts a positive note on a lot of the difficult challenges that we've been faced with over the last year.
Right. Yeah, I know that was on your mind as well, because when we were last together, I think we were talking before Serve Our City.
Mm-hmm.
And you were sharing the number of churches and people and projects that would be worked on around the community. So certainly wanted to debrief that. You mentioned individuals. You know, how many? Do you have a ballpark of how many churches? Again,
you know, I don't. I know that the city was divided into 5 different quadrants:
right.
North, South, East, West, Central, and there. From just a glance, as many as 3 to 5 churches in each of those. So it kind of gives you a rough idea of who was participating. And, of course, that number continues to grow.
Right, for sure. Any other thoughts on Serve Our City? Any other final reflections? Again, 1,000 people is what it sounds like, ballpark.
Well, in some of those cases, it was the prep work being laid, and so there's still, I think, a lot of outcomes to happen, you know, follow-up that will occur. I've been getting messages from people saying, hey, we know that we started this with you, but we wanted to, you know, give you a heads up that these are other people in the community that could benefit from the faith community reaching out and helping in ways that they can. So when we spoke last, I mentioned maybe our listeners are not a part of a local church, but that doesn't keep anyone from saying, hey, I see a need across the street and want to be able to reach out and meet that need. So the encouragement was to be creative and to just watch what happens as you extend a hand to the person next to you when you see that opportunity.
Right. You know, I think we'll tease this a bit more in the second segment, but we are working on curating, I think, a six-part, six-week series of conversations highlighting areas in our community where the church is stepping in.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome as we head into Thanksgiving, as we head into Christmas. And I think it's a good comparison to the topics that we've been digging into the last few weeks. I mean, like a lot of institutions, the church is embroiled in conversations of politics and identity and COVID. And we've had frank conversations, I think, on those things. But at the end of the day, the church is, has been, I think will continue to be, and should continue to be, often at the front lines of our community's most neediest.
Right.
And we can't forget that that is the calling
right.
of the faith community. And that's also the one of the most ultimate goods
right.
In the midst of everything else. That's what the church should be doing. One of those things, can you speak to this briefly, and then we'll go to a break. Foster care.
Yes.
Foster care is a big one, and it's a big need. In Tucson. Enlighten us a little bit on the foster care situation that you see and how the church fits into that.
Well, and to encourage some of the people that hear that phrase and it's like, oh, okay, and you kind of turn out either because your capacity isn't really there to be able to address it, or it just feels so overwhelming over the last year as we've seen students being chained to the home front, or maybe they don't even have a home, they're couch surfing. What we're noticing is as students are going back to school because of the lack of social outlets over the last year, there's more aggression in the schools. There are kids that have been in volatile situations at home, dysfunctional homes, and so those things are coming to the light. I met with a person who's a friend of mine over these past few years in the community. She had six kids land on her home front. She has two of her own, so going into the holidays, a family with eight kids that she's looking after, and so I don't know how pervasive these situations are. I know the numbers show that the foster care system may be down from last year, but at the same time, the need is as great as it ever was. And I think part of what we're going to be talking about, not just today as we begin to tease that out in the weeks to come, is what that actually looks like in practical ways that we all can come together and help, whether we're a bona fide part of the foster care system or a licensed adoption parent. There are a myriad of ways that we can begin to invest in the next generation for the betterment of the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any data or numbers, either nationally or locally, on kind of what is the state of the foster care system in Tucson?
What I have as of late, and I don't know that how current this is or what it looks like for the state of the as a whole, but it says that currently there are 3,255 homes and an 11% drop compared to this time last year, down 33% from the high water mark of 4,875 homes in 2017. And so this is talking about numbers related to a decline in foster homes. But as I mentioned before, even though the decline is there because of COVID, because of things that the pandemic has brought about in the realm of mental health, the needs are accentuated. And so how does the community, the faith community, and even beyond rally around the vulnerable youth in a way that reinforces and protects, if you will, the future generations for our city and beyond?
Right. I would be interested, I think, you know, if not today, we'll get those numbers for sure, of what is the need of children who need foster care? Because I would imagine, just like you said, we're seeing a spike in domestic violence.
Right.
You know, we talk a lot on this show about what are the dynamics of the public safety problem
right.
in Tucson. And if you talk to TPD and officers on the ground, they will tell you that certainly at times, a lot of the gun violence that we see starts out as domestic violence.
Right.
And then becomes something much, much worse. And domestic violence on its face is horrible. And so I can imagine whether it is economic challenges at the home, whether it is domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that there are more reasons than ever for families to be torn apart,
right,
and for kids to be caught in that crossfire. And even as individuals may be less open to having their home being opened up or have less capacity because of COVID, the need certainly isn't going down.
No.
Even as the resources are. On purpose, a couple more minutes on this segment, going a little bit long on purpose because I don't sure. I don't want to stop right here yet.
Yeah.
What is the role of the church? What has been, what should be in being a stopgap for our most vulnerable?
Yeah, I mean, to dig into the origin story, if you look at Old Testament, for those that are familiar with it, there was the Levitical tribe or the priesthood, and the encouragement to them as they were entrusted with taking care of the community was to specifically look out for the foreigners and the orphans and the widows amongst them. In the New Testament, James talks about pure and genuine religion in the sight of God means caring for orphans and widows in their distress, refusing to let the world corrupt you. So what we've seen personally on the 22nd Street corridor where Hope City Church exists is that anything that we have done, any effort that has been there to extend a hand to the vulnerable youth in radical ways has seen God's hand, God's blessing. People have rallied around it. Money has come from unexpected places to meet those needs. I'm not saying that we have every resource we need to fulfill them, but there have been things as small as, hey, this family just had six kids land on them and we need some dressers. And then the next call is, hey, we've got some dressers. Could you use them? Those kinds of things are what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But I think the challenge for the church and even for our community is to say, do I see it? Do I see the opportunities are there? And am I willing to even put some thought, some mental energy to how I might be able to be a part of the solution in some practical, some small way?
Let's pause at that point, Pastor Jeff. Pastor Jeff is with us, our faith and culture contributor here on the program. Let's go to our first break of this hour, our first and last break of this conversation. We'll come back for part two. Maybe put a little bit of a wrap that up a little bit. And then I want to talk about the kind of five or six areas mm-hmm. that you see the church being very involved in and as a community stopgap.
Sure.
And we'll highlight some of the people working on those things and some of what the church is up to in our community over the next 6 weeks. We'll tease that a little bit as we head towards Thanksgiving and Christmas here today on the show. We'll be right back. Tipping Point with Zach Ginster returns in just a minute here on AM 1030 KVOI The Voice.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at storytellerpr.com to learn more. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson, located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater. Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Happy Wednesday. This drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVY The Voice. We're in studio with Pastor Jeff Loxton, our regular faith and culture contributor, pastor of Hope City Church, right here on the 22nd Street Corridor in Tucson, Arizona. And we do look often at the intersection of faith and culture. And I would say over the last 3-4 months, we've hit that intersection really hard, looking at the state of the church as an institution in our communities. You know, I think as we head towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, we're turning towards a little bit more of the theme of the Old Testament book, Isaiah 1:17, says to the faith community of faith, learn to do good, seek justice, help the oppressed, defend the cause of orphans, fight for the rights of widows. And we started talking a little bit in the first segment of really the church is, has been, continues to be, and should continue to be on the front lines of that stopgap for those who have the most needs in our community, and we just listed a bunch of those.
Sure.
Give us a little bit of what the conversations that we're trying to curate over the next 6 weeks towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, highlighting the areas of need and how the church can and should and is stepping into those in the community. Tease that for us a little
bit. Yeah, and you use the word highlight. This is by no means exhaustive because there are so many that are available to be able to help. But some of the organizations that are there in our immediate community, and some of these are national, are phenomenal resources to be able to help people who are trying to do what they can to extend a hand to our vulnerable youth and those in foster care looking to be adopted. Some of our listeners may have heard of Care Portal. Care Portal, we won't delve into the details. I'm going to try and resist the temptation to do that, but it's a three-tiered resource that will provide basic necessities on the prevention side to keep kids from going into foster care. But Arizona is one of several states nationwide that participates in that. GAP Ministries and Christian Family Care are two of several organizations that I've had the privilege of working with directly that provide foster care homes. GAP refers to them as splash houses. Christian Family Care is an organization we partner with to help foster care families as an additional of the faith community, the church being a resource outside of these organizations and outside of these entities to be able to come alongside and meet practical needs for those kids in foster care. DCS is one that I think gets a bad rap sometimes, Department of Child Safety, but I will tell you, having worked closely with them as a foster parent and as someone in the system, there are some heroes that are there advocating for families, and we've actually seen families reunified with their kids with the help of DCS. So they're an amazing resource. And then one more that I wanted to highlight is IMU 360, and they're specifically focused on IMU 360 is the name of the organization that's focused on those youth that fall in that gap between 18 and 24. They've aged out and seemingly lost access to some valuable resources, but IMU 360 says, hey, we're here for you anywhere from hygiene kits to working and development skills to be able to help them become gainfully employed and get into their own homes or their own housing. So there are a lot of amazing people that are advocating for youth within our city, and that's some of what we wanted to to talk about over the next several weeks.
For sure. Yeah, speaking of which, Desiree Cook, who is one of the faces of IMU 360, was just on Ellen.
Yeah?
A couple of it's a crazy story.
Well, and I think this is, I don't know, I mean, it's on her Ellen Facebook show, page, but right. Ellen DeGeneres has said that they will invest in what IMU 360
right
is
here
doing.
Right in Tucson.
Right, yeah. In fact, I think they've sent a team out to meet with her.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome.
It's amazing. It's a project that has gotten some national looks the last couple of years.
Yes.
And I'm blanking on the Mike Rowe. Is that his name?
Yeah, Mike Rowe.
Okay.
Yep. They donated the van that they used to distribute hygiene kit. I mean, it's a force of people, and they're not looking for accolades.
No,
she did this 5 years out of her garage before we even met.
Yep.
But I just feel like the favor God has given this organization, again, because they choose to see people that would ordinarily be overlooked.
Right. Yeah, incredible story. I'm looking forward to seeing if we can pull together a conversation together in December around that. And of course, you know, working on a housing. They're working on a tiny home.
Tiny homes.
Tiny homes project.
Right.
Because I think you hinted at it, but one of the things that's interesting is that whether it's Gap Ministries or Care Portal, there's a lot working on the gap where there are foster children in the system up through 18. I think 18 is the cutoff, right?
Yes.
And after 18, the social services just go away. But
right.
the need doesn't go away.
Yes.
You know, housing need is there. Employment needs are there. Therapy needs are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, social structure is needed. The list goes on. And I think this is an area where institutions like the church can step in and go, we'll be that village, we'll be that community, you know, as you transition into adulthood.
Significant strides can be made in a short period of time. Some of these are long-term solutions, you know, the trauma that's been endured there. But if someone's listening and they've got an extra dresser drawer at home or a twin mattress or cribs that are in the garage because the kids have grown up and they're not at home anymore, those are hot commodities and could be used 100% of the time. And just creating a match between people that have those resources and organizations mm-hmm. like Care Portal or Gap Ministries, or, I mean, there's others that we could put people in touch with. But mm-hmm. Those are little ways that people can get involved without actually having to open up their homes.
Right.
And we'll talk about more of that. But there's lots of incentives that I think exist to be able to help people care for the youth in ways that would just make a huge difference.
Well, I think it's one of the things that Hope City Church does well is really serving as that connector.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with between the community on the 22nd Street corridor and your congregation members and these social services, often you're the voice saying, hey, we have this need. Let's make that connection. Where can people find more about you or connect with you offline or have a follow-up conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. You can get in touch with us at HopeCityChurchTucson.com. I would love to chat more with you on the subject.
Pastor Jeff Loxton, pastor of Hope City Church here in Tucson. Thanks as always, and looking forward to the next 6 or so weeks of conversation. This will be fun.
Thanks, Zach.
We'll see you soon. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a little from me, and then Ruben Navarrete will be on, nationally syndicated columnist. We'll talk some national issues here on the show. We'll be back after this. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona here. This drive time hour of Tipping Point, live out of the Common Workspace Studios here on 1030 The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger, opening downtown on October 20th. They did open on October 20th, and they're doing well as far as I can see. Little Love Burger will serve up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. Follow their beat on social at Little Love Burger. We're so excited to be a part of their launch. A great group of men and women here locally who are starting a business in Tucson, Arizona. Always looking to celebrate, and we're celebrating with them during their launch here a few doors down from the Rialto Theater. We just said goodbye to our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Logsdon, talking about, as we head towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, the holiday season, talking about some of the large needs in our community that the faith community, that churches as institutions around our city are working on. So it's always good to hear that from him. You can check it out on the podcast. Ruben Navarrete is up in just a moment. Nationally syndicated journalist, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. We're going to talk a little bit about the ever-growing conversation around critical race theory. We'll keep trying to dig into it. What is it? What isn't it? What does it all mean? We'll chat with him about his perspective from his perch in sunny Southern California. So that's what's coming up. As always, you can reach out 520-790-2040 is your live line opportunity to join in. Certainly yesterday talked about the bipartisan infrastructure bill that was signed by the president on Monday, and I've got a few short minutes here, so I'll get into this. I continue to be intrigued by the person and style, and I don't mean clothing style, of the individual that is Senator Sinema here in Arizona. There was a really interesting piece in Politico that I would recommend anyone go and read, because Senator Sinema is usually tight-lipped. It's interesting, when you talk to people who have known her over the course of her career, they will tell you that early on, Senator Sinema, when she was in the Arizona State Legislature, was someone who wanted to have an opinion and airtime on just about anything and everything. Very accessible, very engaging with the media, would talk a lot about a lot of different things, always available for comment. And as she has grown in her in the ranks of leadership, I guess you could say, she's become a little bit more tight-lipped, and now it's strategic. So to get an interview with the senator is a pretty big deal, and Politico did. And the article is called "Sinema Speaks Up and Shakes Off Her Critics." And there's a few things that stand out to me, and I know even saying the name can be controversial, but there's a few quotes in here that stand out to me, and I think you know me by now, this will resonate. She said this: "I've been concerned at the push that happens in both parties, this push to have no disagreements, to only have unity, or to only speak with one voice. And some will say, oh, that's our strength. having some disagreement is normal. It's real. It's human. And it's an opportunity for us as mature beings to work through it. Classic social worker perspective. And I agree. I've stated many times on this show my concern that our politics now is just each side being whipped into a monolithic position. And up until recently, that's not how it worked. And I think at the certainly at the turn of this century, our politics began to change, where to be a D meant one thing and to be an R meant one thing, and you were whipped into those positions constantly, and no disagreement was allowed. And if you disagree, you're a traitor. Kyrsten Sinema is a traitor. The 13 Republicans who voted for the infrastructure bill in the House are traitors. Not the Senate, by the way, just the House. I agree with her on this. I thought that was interesting. She was asked, why do you hang out with GOP leader McConnell so much? I love this quote. He has a dry sense of humor. It's underrated. I'm such a fan of her style in the sense of, and I may not get to every example, but in this piece, you can see her saying, look, I dress the way I dress because it's for me and I like it. My male colleagues don't get those comments. Why do I get those comments? Yeah, I hang out with senators and individuals on the right. I happen to like them. I love the quotes a little further down. I may not get to it. I happen to like them. And it's like this moment in America kills me, y'all, where we go, someone who is a Democrat can like a Republican? Right? And if you talk to people who've been in the game, as I have, they will say, look, not that long ago, we could hash it out on the floor of the state legislature. We could go get a beer. And nobody was afraid of who was going to take a picture and put it up on Twitter. No one was afraid of this Democratic XYZ person is with this Republican person. The horror. Look, I know the politics of Senator Kyrsten Sinema are complex, and I'm not trying to paper over those. But this article was it. I just love some of her lines. You've got to read them, and it's a lot of fun. And I want to say this. Look. I think Senator Sinema, and I'm willing to take the heat for this, I think Senator Sinema is a throwback to old school, and I would say more productive, American politics. I had this thought yesterday, there was a gubernatorial candidate running in the state of Arizona who just put out this outlandish tweet, and it was red meat on steroids. That was factually incorrect. It's something that he or she, as governor of the state of Arizona, would have no oversight over. But it was a sweet national red meat talking point. It got eaten up. And I had this thought yesterday that I think those who tweet less are probably better at governance. It's just a theory. I bet if you charted it out, the most productive people who actually make the most positive change in people's lives through our governmental system are probably the people who are the worst at Twitter. It's just a theory. And Senator Sinema has a policy of not telling the media out loud what she's going to do, but behind closed doors. She's been a big part of negotiating a historic, whether you agree with it or not, it is historic, infrastructure package, has managed to get something through around prescription drugs. Is it as much as some people want? No. But good grief, have we lost faith in incrementalism? The answer is yes. Behind closed doors, real policy is happening by someone who says, I don't have to genuflect to the media, and I don't have to telegraph what I'm going to do to go and get it done. The pressure to be okay, the need to be okay with going behind closed doors and working with people across the aisle on compromise and solutions, the pressure to not do that is so huge right now. And I certainly think it's generational too. The need to constantly be out there on social media and in the media and on cable news. What happened to sitting down, hashing things out, and coming out and saying, okay, we did it on behalf of the American people. And this is what Senator Sinema is doing. She said this, and I'll leave on this. If you're in the middle of negotiating things that are delicate or difficult, doing it in good faith directly with each other is the best way to get an outcome. I'm still in the process of negotiating the second provision of the president's agenda, and I don't negotiate in the press. There's this growing trend of people in both political parties who promise things that cannot be delivered in order to get the short-term political gain. And I believe that it damages the long-term health of our democracy. And I don't know whether Senator Sinema is doing this for political gain. I don't know what she's strategizing. She plays three-level chess in a world where most everybody else plays on one level. But I, for one, am appreciating the tone towards, look, let's under-promise, over-deliver, let's shape bipartisan incremental change, let's actually get things done, we don't have to telegraph it out loud, leave my fashion style alone, let's actually get things done. I appreciate that. I'll just put it on the air. I appreciate that. And I think whether it's just words or whether the actions will continue to back it up, I think America needs a little bit more of that. So anyway, you can agree or disagree with me on this. Disagreement makes for even more fun radio, by the way. Sinema speaks up and shakes off her critics is the title of a political piece. She's our senator here in Arizona. If I see a piece nationally about her, my ears perk up. This one was fun. Lots of great quotes. I happen to agree with most of them. Let's go to our last break of the hour. Ruben Navarrete is with us on the other side. We'll talk another national topic, critical race theory, after this. Don't go anywhere.
To Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be and tell them Zach sent you over.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
After you finish listening to The Tipping Point, listen to my show, The Hugh Hewitt Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right here on 1030 KBOI The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here on Tipping Point on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We are anticipating our final guest of the hour, Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. He is covering some of the most watched national issues. And we talk with him on a regular basis on this program. Specifically, we'll talk about critical race theory, what it is, what it isn't, and what it means. Always looking forward to his thoughts on that. It's something that he has been covering in depth and certainly on his podcast. One last Kyrsten Sinema thing. I got to do this as we're waiting for Ruben to hop on. Again, I mentioned this Politico article in my very short monologue segment in the third segment. Cinema sometimes often serves as a go-between with Republicans for her Democratic colleagues, capitalizing on the years she spent in both the House and Senate cultivating the relationships with the GOP. She insists those relationships are not transactional, but instead reflect the fact that, quote, I'm a human who has friends. I just, it makes me laugh that we are in a state of American life where that deadpan response is funny. It shouldn't be funny. It should be normal. It should be unordinary. And it's funny. I'm a human who has friends. Is that okay? It's just made me laugh. Oh, again. Okay, I'm done with this article, I promise. Politico. Cinema speaks up and shakes off her critics. Checking in, Mr. Matt Neely. Any Ruben Navarrete as we speak?
We are on the lookout for him, but none as yet.
Perfect. No worries.
One thing about Kyrsten Sinema, I'll tell you, and I know a family member, and just leave it at that, and, you know, agree with her or not, whip smart.
Oh,
very,
yeah.
Very smart
absolutely.
Person.
Yeah, and her colleagues will say that, whether they like her or not. Realize that she's always the smartest person in the room. And there are politicians who think they are. I think she actually is. Most rooms is probably the smartest person. Is the smartest person in the room. Just absolutely brilliant. So this is a thought, and let me tell you, I am as objective as I possibly can be on this issue. What I'm going to say, and I know Ruben and I we're going to cover it, and whenever Ruben jumps on, we will. I'm processing this cultural moment in America called critical race theory. And my interest is not to find which side of that issue I'm on. My job here is to say what's missing and what are we really concerned about in America? What is really going on underneath the punditry, underneath the politicking season? And there was this piece, and you know me because I've told you what I read. I am gathering from a ton of different sources all the time, on the right, on the left. There was this piece, how media coverage of critical race theory misses the point. And I want to throw this out there, and I want to get y'all's thoughts on this because I think this is interesting. Rick Hess over at the American Enterprise Institute, which is right of center, did a report looking at how the media broadly has been covering critical race theory. And here was his findings. Okay, not my words. Here's his findings, and this has gotten me thinking. He found that coverage about CRT has tended to focus on what is not controversial. Notably, whether or not schools should teach about racism or slavery. Rick examined all of the CRT articles published by the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, USA Today, and three influential education press outlets. He found issues of, for example, anti-racism was mentioned in barely 10% of articles. The practice of teaching against colorblindness was similarly mentioned in only 10% of articles. Schools implementing affinity groups was mentioned in only 5% of articles. Every single article examined in the AEI report discussed racism in some form or fashion. 80% of the articles looked at mentioned the history of race or the way history is taught in schools. A strong majority referenced slavery. A recent national poll found that 74% of white Americans and 75% of black Americans favored teaching students that the dispute over slavery was the principal cause of the Civil War. There's not disagreement on that, says this report among high-profile Republicans. And I've mentioned this on the show before as an observer. Again, I'm an observer. I'm a storyteller. I tell you what I see. I mentioned to Ruben a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Ruben, where I was watching a conversation on The View about critical race theory. And Whoopi Goldberg, I think, was the one who said, we need to be teaching history in school. And it perked my mind up because I think this argument, wherever you land on critical race theory, whether you think it should be in schools, whether you ascribe to it, whether you are on the other side of that spectrum, I would agree with this study. I think the conversation we're having is not going deep enough. I think that there are three conversations going on at once, and it all gets thrown under this one big term that can be easily politicized and easily and purposefully misunderstood called critical race theory. And here are the three, and I mentioned these on the show before. When we talk about this, I think we have the framework called critical race theory. And then we have the teaching of history and racism in schools. And I think those are actually two separate things. There is overlap. It's like square and rectangle. You know, they're different, but they can kind of fit together at some point. And then third, there is the execution in the classroom. Right? Again, affinity groups, assigning third graders to rank themselves by power and privilege, so on and so forth. Right? And so I think there's three things there. There's the framework. There's the teaching of history and racism and the history of that in schools. And then there are the excesses in the classroom. And all those things get bundled up into one thing that we call critical race theory. And it's just wrong. It is disingenuous. It is incorrect. And it misses the issue. And this piece, how media coverage of critical race theory misses the point, doesn't talk about the philosophical underpinnings, pros and cons, of a philosophy that challenges liberal thought and Western philosophy. And we need to have that conversation. But that conversation is different from the history of slavery and racism in schools. Richard Delgado and Gene I'm not going to say that name because someone will correct me and I want to get it right first. Two founders of the CRT movement write in their book Critical Race Theory, an introduction. Critical Race Theory questions the very foundations of the liberal order. These are the authors, including equality theory, legal reasoning, enlightenment rationalism, and neutral principles of constitutional law. That's not the history of slavery and racism. Again, square and rectangle. There is overlap, but I think those are two separate things. And this critique of media coverage, again, it's Washington, it's Wall Street Journal, USA Today, it's MSNBC, and it's Fox. Nobody is talking about the actual issue. No one is critiquing, reviewing, asking, questioning critical race theory as it is put forth by the authors. And there's prominent news people saying this is an issue of whether we teach the real history of America. 75% of Americans, white or not, agree. Let's teach the history of America. So I think there's multiple issues. Both the right and the left are smushing it into one. It's incorrect. It's disingenuous. And it's not actually addressing the issue. So Ruben Navarrete and I were hoping to talk about this. We'll get his thoughts on another day. But this piece really made me think. And by the way, check it out. It's called How Media Coverage of Critical Race Theory Misses the Point. Tell me what you think of the article. Agree, disagree? Do you agree or disagree with me? Look, I'm looking for how do we have a conversation that addresses this in the American heart, in the American consciousness, and moves on and moves forward? Because the fact of the matter is we're in for 2 years now of this conversation, and it's not going on anywhere on purpose. We got to address these issues, not let it kill us from the inside, and move forward. We've got a call. I believe, and I want to fit it in. Doug is on the line. Doug, go ahead. Thanks for being on the air.
Yeah, Zach, totally agree with you about teaching the history and about racism. The problem I think many of us have is when you're categorizing our kids by race and then shaming them because of their race and, you know, putting something on them that they shouldn't have to face. And I just wanted to share something about my grandson. My grandson You know, his dad is Hispanic. You know, he has an Hispanic last name. And, of course, my wife's Asian, so he's majority minority. And in a class he was in, they asked, who here is are minorities? And him and other kids stood up, and the teacher pointed to him and some other kids and saying, you're not minorities, sit down. And I'm going, what? And he just told me that story and just laughed, and he goes, Papa, it's no big deal. I go, it is a big deal. I mean, first of all, you are a minority, and now she's categorizing you as you're not a minority, and how does that make the other kids feel that are not minorities? So it's just not right, I think, that kids are blamed for their race. So that's, I think, the concern people have.
Doug, I appreciate the call, and I've got a minute left, so I'm limited in how I can respond. But I think ultimately, when we talk about what parents have and see around the country as concern, I think the data points to it's not about the history. I think that parents are saying, look, when my school introduces affinity groups to segregate students or staff by race to discuss difficult topics, first of all, I don't think that's how you solve the problem. I think we have to have difficult conversation and bring people together to do it. And I think my gut hunch would be that I think that is what parents are looking at and go, wait a second, is that what we want? Again, there's unity around, let's teach the real history of slavery and racism. We got to do it. I don't think there's disagreement on that. But our national conversation, our local conversation, isn't focused on the actual way forward out of this. Doug, I appreciate your call. Matt Rubin said, daylight savings time. Arizona screwed him up. It's okay. We'll take
the blame. It happens a lot with the ECS around the change. Yep.
We'll have him on soon. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster at noon. We'll be back tomorrow, Tucson, to have more conversation right down the middle, talking about the issues, and more importantly, what do we do with it? What's next? What now? We'll be back, Tucson. Stay safe out there. We'll see you 9 a.m. tomorrow.